Welcome to Chevron's Lock to Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
This episode, we will be talking about season one, episode 17, Solitudes, which we're going to go ahead and give you fair warning. It may get a little crazy up in here. And this one may be a little long. We make no promises.
We literally just talked about, like, we were doing, like, we talked before we record, obviously, and we were just saying, okay, guys, like, rein it in. We can't let it be a four-hour episode. We know we love this episode. There's a lot to talk about, but we got to be responsible and hit the highlights and not let this go on too long.
If this goes for 4 hours, guys, I blame Jess.
That's
and
fair.
Only Jess.
Hey, we are all in this together, as the great Zac Efron once said. Thank you, Chelsea.
This together.
I think we should insert the song there, and then for like a few seconds, and then continue on.
And never get fined and sued and told we have to pay royalties.
That's true.
Zac Efron's gonna come hunting for you.
You know, I think you're okay as long as you're not making money off of it, and if it's a short enough clip. I don't actually know.
We'll just avoid it.
I mean, we're using copyrighted materials already.
Yeah, I mean,
we're fully supported by MGM.
It seems to be okay because people from MGM are listening, apparently, so...
All right, anyway, back on topic.
Yes.
This episode was written by Brad Wright, who's one of the co-creators. We get very used to him, but this is the first episode directed by Martin Wood, who will become a regular throughout this series as well as Atlantis, so... Welcome, Martin Wood. We love you. He does a great job on this show.
He also, real quick, seems to always do episodes that have to do with ice or water or some sort of wetness. I'm just saying.
This one aired first the 6th of February, 1998, and it's our first appearance of Dan Shea as Sergeant Siler. Woo-hoo! So that's kind of fun. As usual, spoiler and content warning, there will be explicit content as well as spoilers for the whole series.
I'm going to talk about Jack's dick at least once in this episode.
And honestly, that's fair.
In context. Not just randomly.
All right. Melanie, synopsis.
All right. After fleeing from a planet of Jaffa, a mysterious power surge from the Stargate separates Daniel and Teal'c from Sam and Jack. Sam and Jack discover they've ended up on an ice planet. Little do they know, they're actually closer to home than they think. And that's it.
Wow. You know, I love this episode. First of all, I think it's safe to say that we all love this episode, like, a lot. I know it's in my top five. I don't know if it's in y'all's top five. But I remember when I was first watching this, like, watching SG-1 for the first time, and I was texting Melanie, like, through every episode, and it was, like, 10 o'clock at night, and I was just about to start Solitudes, and she's like, wait, I want to FaceTime you while you watch this. And I was just like, okay.
I remember.
So we were trying to FaceTime each other while watching Solitudes because Mel wanted to see my reaction live to all of the shippy goodness that she knew was coming and that I had no idea was coming. But that's like the first thing I think of every time I think of this episode.
It also didn't work very well because Jess's internet's not the greatest.
Yeah.
No, it's not. No, it's it, you said. Oh, you rude. even said you couldn't stream it and you couldn't do it. You couldn't do both at the same time.
I don't recall that at all. Your Honor, I request to go to the bar. I would like to appeal this. Whatever. No, it's not me.
Okay.
So you guys were all excited for me to watch Solitudes, but then I watched it at like 12:30 in the morning, and so you were both asleep. So I was just texting into the void.
Yeah, but then we woke up and we bombarded you.
Yeah, but so it goes like this. Sam and Jack stuck in a frozen world alone. Is this a fan fiction? Is there only one bed? And she's patching him up while he talks about his past. Mm-hmm. They're combining body heat now. This is definitely a fanfic. He said it would otherwise be very pleasant. And it's his sidearm. There was a lot.
This episode is genuinely, like, a fanfic brought to life. It is all the tropes that you want. Like, it is They're stranded off-world, even though they're not off-world. They're on Earth. Spoiler.
They're still stranded.
But they're stranded. They're alone. They got to conserve body heat. Someone's injured, so we got some hurt comfort going. We're getting bonding over a traumatic incident. It has everything. I don't know how anyone could hate this episode.
I do wish that it had been later on in the series, maybe.
Yes, big same.
Yeah.
I always wonder what would happen if this episode was in season 4 instead of season 1.
They gave us a different frozen wasteland in season 4.
Yes, they did.
And I believe they still kind of huddled for warmth and they still were stranded off world, so it works.
But yeah, so already I feel like our thoughts are kind of disjointed on this one.
It doesn't help too that like there's really not like a solid like plot to this episode. I mean, there's a very basic premise, but there's not tons of action.
Yeah. It's very character driven.
Yes.
It's a bottle episode. It's a great bottle episode.
Yeah.
Are you saying ball or bottle?
Bottle.
Bottle.
Oh.
Sorry, my East Texas accent, guys. I'm so sorry. Bottle.
I was like, ball's not in this episode.
He could have been.
I mean, it's a little early for ball.
Yeah, because basically, like, the summary of the episode is the episode. Sam and Jack think they're off-world. They're trying to get back home. Daniel and Teal'c are on Earth and are trying to find Sam and Jack. And then it all gets tied together very nicely in the last 3 minutes of the episode. But that's literally all that happens in the entire episode.
It's true. It's very plot-like. So it starts out in the gate room. There's an incoming wormhole. Daniel and Teal'c come flying through. It's unexpected. Apparently, SG-1 just barely left, so Hammond is concerned. And so he goes down into the gate room and almost gets hit by Daniel flying through the gate, which is actually a little amusing. Daniel's out cold. Teal'c doesn't know where Jack and Carter are because they were right behind them.
Using that meter system.
Meter, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Apparently, the Goa'uld use
metric.
A metric system. But then we see that somehow, because we see after Daniel and Teal'c come through, the wormhole is kind of like flashing and blinking in and out, and then it cuts out on its own before Sam and Jack come through.
And the gate explodes, and there's like lots of lights, and it's crazy pants.
Yeah, bad things are happening in the gate room.
Yes.
And then we cut to like frozen world spot. You see a gate, and then we see the unconscious forms of Sam and Jack. And Sam sort of stirs and takes off her helmet. And it made me laugh because she was wearing a helmet.
Thank God she was.
And of course Jack wasn't. And I'm like, maybe that's why he's still unconscious and she isn't. Yeah. And then we get the title sequence. So it's a very intriguing beginning. I remember watching it the first time and being like, what is happening? Because it doesn't make any sense. So intrigue. So then we come back from the titles to Daniel waking up Daniel is unconscious in the midbay, but stable, and Hammond is trying to suss out what happened from Teal'c.
Who was looking like a snack this episode.
Oh my gosh. Christopher Judge is so...
He is! Fine. He's
No, I just wasn't ready for you to say snack. And so like...
That snack with a double C? You're welcome. For all the youths out there.
Oh my god. We pull in all kinds of audiences, guys.
Look, I just want to make sure I'm appealing to everyone.
We're making sure that we're still hip. Is hip still a word?
Yes. It's lit now, Mel. It's lit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hip anymore.
I'm still making sure that we're lit.
But seriously, though, Christopher Judge is dressed in, like, this, like, form-fitting tight tank and then, like, very form-fitting pants that's belted at the waist. And I was just like, oh, hello. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, dude looks good.
Mm-hmm.
He does. And he's so huge.
We're gonna let that hang there?
In more ways than one?
And then we have our first dick reference, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. It's going to be that
someday I'll learn. So I love that Christopher Judge does a really good job this episode of like, he still is defaulting to soldier mode. Like he's problem solving, but he's also clearly upset and concerned, but he really, it's the very Teal'c balance of he is clearly frazzled and upset by what's happening and that Jack and Sam are missing, but he is keeping it together pretty well outwardly. Mm-hmm. And he's a man of action. He just wants to be like doing something like, I'm going to go find them. He doesn't know how or where to find them, but he's going to go find them.
And I love how adamant he is that like, he knows for a fact, because Hammond starts throwing out possibilities like maybe Sam and Jack are dead or something else happened to them. And Teal'c is so steadfast in, no, they were right behind me. I know they're okay. I know it's going to be okay. We just got to go find them. They're either trapped back on that planet or something else happened. But he is so loyal and steadfast, and he like refuses to accept that they're gone.
Yeah, so he does share that they were getting fired at by some distant energy weapons. He wasn't clear on if it was the Goa'uld or not. He does not think that Sam and Jack got hit. It sounds like they all went through it about the same time. Mm-hmm. And so Teal'c is already determined to go back and look for them, but the gate is currently not operational, and Hammond wants to send a probe through first since they were being shot at as they were going through the gate, which is very sensible, I think.
Of course it is.
And Teal'c's just like, nah, I'm just gonna go bouncing on out the gate and see what's up.
So that makes me wonder, did they send a probe through the first time before they went to the planet?
Yes, because you can see it.
We see it when they send the second one.
Okay, because they shot at the second probe that came through the gate, so I'm wondering why the people didn't shoot at the first probe that went in the gate.
They were probably waiting for SG-1 and then started firing.
Yeah. Also, I love Siler. This is Siler's first appearance, as Chelsea mentioned, and Dan Shea kills it, in my opinion. Like, I totally believe that this guy is in charge, like, could be second in command of, like, the Stargate itself in terms of, like, fixing it. Like, when he tells me that, like, oh, the modules have got to be connected, and he starts, like, he just seems authoritative in a way that I'm like, yes, this man, he knows what he speaks of. Like, okay, Siler, I got you.
He does. Well, and he comes off as, like, military, also a sergeant. Like, mm-hmm. I think he does a good job of sitting in his rank. He knows what he's talking about, but he also isn't a commissioned officer. But he's gonna say what he knows is the right thing.
And he stands up to Hammond. Hammond's like, I got 24 hours. or Siler says, it'll take 24 hours. And Hammond goes, I'll give you half that. And Siler's like, that's not how it works.
I love that moment. Yeah, so then we go to what we know is Antarctica, but nobody else knows that at this point. And Jack comes to while Sam is investigating the gate, and she runs over, concerned, to take a look at him and informs him that his leg is broken, and he concurs that indeed it is broken.
He would know.
And then so she kind of gives him the situation that it's not great, and then he gives us this classic Jack line.
What's the bad news? Because unless they redecorated the gate room, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore.
So there's another Wizard of Oz. Mm-hmm. And then we also get another For Crying Out Loud.
Yes.
Which is the first one since in like 7 episodes.
It's been a long time. Yeah.
It's been a while. We got one in this moment. And Sam informs him that Daniel and Teal'c are not anywhere to be seen. It seems unlikely that they're on whatever this planet is with them, because it's a pretty contained area, and it's unlikely Teal'c and Daniel would have wandered off without them. Mm-hmm. So Sam posits that perhaps this gate was overrun during an ice age or by a glacier or something and is no longer really in use. And she then is very convinced that they're in trouble, and Jack tries to keep her spirits up, basically that it's going to be fine. We just got to find the DHD. And she's like, we don't know. There's no DHD.
I don't know where it is.
I feel like Jack tries to keep Sam's panicking spirits up is the absolute theme of this episode. It is. Sam spirals into despair and panic and worry, and Jack is there to be like, snap out of it. Like, it's going to be okay.
But I mean, to be fair, though, she has every right to panic. Oh, because, totally.
No they're, DHD.
They're
no
totally screwed.
Yeah.
This is the perfect time to panic.
Exactly.
No, that's fair. It's fair.
But that's Jack's job as the CEO, is to keep command of the situation and keep his people calm and focused.
Exactly. Of course. And he's good at it.
He's very good at it.
Just not totally sure why that warranted.
Just anytime I put the words Jack and good together, it happens. It's a natural.
I have no idea what just. Also, while Jack was out for the count, I did appreciate that Sam surveyed the whole area that they were in. Mm-hmm. Like, she took the layout of everything. Well, I mean, in, like a good second in command would do, but still.
Yeah, yeah. He was out for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is not great.
No.
He really should have been wearing a helmet. It's just...
Lesson learned.
Not, because he never wears a helmet.
And then the rest of the team just ditches him. They follow his lead.
So then we go back to the gate room, where we have Teal'c in a tank top again and a sling. And this is where we get the exchange with Siler.
Oh, sorry. I jumped the gun.
No, it's fine. We were talking about how great Siler is. And I love this because it's such a sci-fi trope for someone to be like, it's going to take this long. And they're like, you have this long. And then they pull it off somehow. And I love that Siler's just like, nope. It's going to take 24 hours. Like, if I could have done it faster, I would have told you faster. As if Siler didn't know that there were already stakes and that he needed to hurry. I'm just agreeing with Jess. I like Siler. I think his introduction is very compelling and sets us up to... I mean, I wish we got more of him, honestly.
Yeah.
But that's all we get in the gate room. We go back to Antarctica.
It's a lot of those flat, like, cut scenes back and forth between SGC and Sam and Jack, which... Obviously, our team is split, but it's going to be a lot of, and meanwhile, and then meanwhile.
I do appreciate that in this one, at least when we cut from one place to another, we usually get new information.
Yes.
So, like, yes, that was a shortcut to the gate room, but we got that Siler is working on the gate, and it's going to take 24 hours before they can send anything through it. And it's like, that's important information that we got, even if it was just a quick cut.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we go back, and Jack is... moaning in pain as Carter is setting his leg, which is rough.
Yep.
They should have morphine, right? Like, don't soldiers carry morphine? There's no reference to her giving him morphine.
That's what Fick is for.
Maybe Teal'c had it, or Daniel had it in their pack, and Sam didn't have it. I'm just saying.
Or maybe they had it. I don't know how much help actually, like, one or two injections of morphine is going to help if you are, like, setting your leg by someone who's inexperienced and you've got other shit. I mean, morphine doesn't last that long.
Right. So I would think that that's what you'd use the doses you have for. It's like, we're going to hit you with the morphine, then I'm going to do this. It's still going to suck.
Yeah.
But I mean, then later, once she realizes that he has broken ribs and is bleeding internally and coughing up blood, she wouldn't want to be giving him morphine because it can cause breathing problems anyway. So ultimately, probably okay that she didn't give him morphine.
He lives at the end. It's fine.
So Jack is kind of giving Carter a hard time for how she's setting and splinting his leg. And he calls her doctor. And she's like, wrong kind of doctor.
When, like, we literally one episode ago had Carter tell me what's happening with this volcano. And she's like, I'm not a volcanologist. So I don't know. I feel super confident Jack knows exactly what kind of doctor she is.
But don't they have some sort of triage technique, though? Like, shouldn't you learn how to set a bone in basic training?
Well, she clearly did learn how to set and splint a bone, but she's never done it before.
Yeah.
Okay.
She literally says, I've never done this before.
Okay.
It's one thing to learn because she would have basic first aid training. Well, not like more than basic first aid training, but it's still, she would have like practiced on not an actual broken leg or
that's
something.
Fair.
That's like saying I know how to do the Heimlich maneuver in theory, but if you put like a choking person in front of me, I'm just gonna be like bouncing you around and hoping for the best.
Yeah, it's very different in practice. I was an EMT in college, and I practiced like setting and splinting and stuff. And I know the only time I ever really had to do it in real life was actually at my house. My aunt's hip popped out of the joint. She has fake, like, she has artificial hips, because otherwise, like, I
so
would
her
not.
Hips do lie. So bad. I'm so sorry. I was just really popped up. Sorry.
Otherwise, I would not have felt comfortable reducing her hip without like X-rays and stuff, because you
fuck it up.
You can fuck it up pretty bad. But she has artificial hips, so I popped it back in for her, and it's like I know how to do it. I've learned how to do it. But when I was doing it, I was like, Oh, God. Oh. I don't know what's going on. Very different things.
Poor Sam. And she looks, like, Sam herself looks so distressed doing it, too. Like, she clearly is not comfortable. She knows that she's causing him pain. She is just trying to do her absolute best. But AT totally sells it by the way she's acting while Sam is doing this.
It's so, there's so much going on that she manages to convey. Because it's like she physically is in pain because she's causing him pain. Mm-hmm. Which I think everyone's at least had a little bit of an experience of, like, having to hurt someone to make them better type moment.
Yeah.
I one time had to fish out, like, an inch long, really thick sliver that got really deep into my niece's foot. And it was, like, excruciating for me, like, because I'm having to hold her down and, like, she's screaming bloody murder. And I'm like, I have to get this out of your foot. Mm-hmm. But it's painful, and Jack and Sam does such a good job, or AT does such a good job of, like, conveying that. But then she's also kind of trying to be like, hey, is this your, like, she's trying to take his mind off of it, which is adorable.
And thank God she did, because those questions lead us to getting some Jack backstory, which I know we're all weak for. Like, we get to learn about Jack and his past, and that this is then technically his ninth broken bone, and
including skull fractures, which fractures count as broken bones.
Sam's doing all the right things, even though she's clearly distressed herself. She's still doing everything she can.
Yeah, so Sam then keeps pushing him for information, like, and she's clearly just trying to keep him talking. It's not like she's being super nosy. She's just asking him for more information.
And they're, like, vague questions, too. It's like, oh, what happened? Like, how did you break those?
Yeah. And then after he informs her that his chute didn't open or didn't open early enough and he got the skull fractures in Iraq, she asks him how long before he was rescued. And we get this heartbreaking moment.
So, how long before you were rescued?
No rescue. It wasn't exactly an official mission, if you know what I mean. So I had to make it out on my own. 9 days.
Wow. What got you through it?
Sarah.
Your wife.
At the time, I had to see her.
So can I infer that this might be the time he got trapped in the Iraqi prison, or is that a completely different time?
I think they're different times.
Oh, geez. I think different time as well. I'm also, like, 90% sure this is a MacGyver reference. I'm almost positive, just because in season 2 of MacGyver, there's an episode where MacGyver jumps out of an airplane and he over the Iraq-Iran border, and he hurts himself, and he gets taken. I mean, now in that MacGyver episode, he gets taken in and, like, cared for by somebody, but there was no rescue. He had to kind of get himself out and then meet up and rendezvous. So, and then earlier in that clip, Sam asked, when was this? And Jack goes, 1980 something. So obviously, it makes sense for his timeline as a character, but also at that, I'm pretty sure it's a MacGyver reference. I could be wrong. Huh. It could be coincidence, but I'm pretty sure it is.
I mean, could be.
I don't know.
It sounds pretty similar, yeah.
But it's very similar.
Can we talk about Sam's face when Jack mentions Sarah?
Sarah, yeah.
Because I don't know what that face means.
It's kind of like surprise.
Which,
but, like, why be surprised?
Right? Why would you be
I think she's surprised that he gave her that information.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, that's fair.
Because he's pretty close to the vest kind of guy.
That's true. I'm sure he probably doesn't talk about his family all that much either.
No.
Well, yeah, I mean, she didn't even look cold Lazarus.
Oh, well, I mean, what I'm saying.
She only knows they exist because a crystal version of him spilled the beans.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which means that, like, this episode, or, like, the things that happen between this episode are so bonding because, like, so quickly they are put in a different situation. Like, it's one thing to be, like, CEO, second in command, like, you're in and out of your missions, but now it's, like, you're relying on each other and he's almost like breaking the rules by like the previously set established rules of the relationship of like, I'm your boss and like you're my second, and like we keep things work. That's just work. And then we get so much personality from both of them in this episode, and so much information about how both of them work and their characteristics and their personalities that it, I lost my train of thought 100% right there. I got so wrapped up thinking about Sam and Jack. I just genuinely lost. I was like, God, I just love them so much. That it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think people who listen to us would know that we really like character-driven story.
Mm-hmm.
Then they kind of change the subject, though. After that really loaded moment, he's like, all right, what's the supply situation?
Mm-hmm.
And of course she knows, like, she's already taken stock of that. She gives him a quick rundown of everything they have.
3 days, right? But they can stretch it.
Yeah, three days of supplies. They can stretch it. Not very much water.
But you can melt ice, yeah.
And then she's worried about the flashlight batteries. They do have thermal blankets. So could be worse. Like, they are...
That's
they
true, have some supplies. But I don't know how well thermal blankets will last in Antarctica. I'm just saying.
That's why they have to combine body heat.
They have one sleeping bag.
Which is just as good as the one bedroom.
Look, I'm just saying, when we get further along this episode, Sam definitely, like, reaches her hand under the sleeping bag and, like, curls it around, like, on top of his body.
There's a lot of snuggling.
I'm just saying. It was, yeah, so.
There's survival, then there's snuggling.
Yeah.
We hit snuggle.
Yep. So Sam is, once again, seeming pretty dejected, and we get Jack telling her, like, reassuring her that they're gonna get out of here. Like, we're gonna get out.
How's the splint feel?
Captain? You have to believe me.
I want to, sir. I just don't see how.
Then we better start looking for a way. Because I'll be damned if I'm gonna die on some godforsaken block of ice a million light years from home. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Oh, man.
I mean.
Oh, jeez.
Amanda Tapping.
He's just such a good CEO.
He is. He's so great. But I also love that she is kind of willing to be vulnerable about with it here. Like, in the past, she's always been very yes, sir, kind of follows his lead of whatever situation they're in. But here she is. He makes it an order that they're going to get out of here. And she doesn't immediately say yes, sir. She changes the subject. And I think it's kind of interesting that she, I think it's in maybe in response to how he was kind of vulnerable with her, that she doesn't just buck up and do the good soldier of like, yes, sir, we're going to get out of here. She lets herself show him the doubt that she has.
Yeah.
It's a really sweet moment.
Yeah.
And then he asks her to help him up, which is just like such a colossally bad idea.
Yeah. But on the plus side, what we do get is a great shot of Sam tucked perfectly under Jack's arm. His hand just looks very massive upon her shoulder. It works for me. They're kind of squished together. They're framed up close. And they're going to put some paint on the walls and some windows and some curtains. And it's going to be a home sweet home. So they're already moving on together.
He has jokes and he makes her smile and... I think it kind of relaxes her that he's trying to seem somewhat normal in this situation.
Yes, since he makes her laugh. Yeah. It's adorable. Her hand is on his abs.
Oh, yes. There's lots of stabilizing. Yes, I'm so glad you brought this up. There's lots of, like, hand placement that I just side-eye. Just like, yeah, that's where you're putting your hand there, huh? All right, yeah, sure, for stabilization. Mm-hmm.
I have helped a lot of people up after leg injuries. Like,
that's how I hold them.
That is not what it looks like.
No. Sure isn't.
Also, I really hope that Jack was regretting the fingerless gloves during his time in Antarctica. Because Sam has these nice warm-looking black gloves and his fingers are exposed the entire time, including... His hand is usually on top of the blanket, and I'm like, someone put that hand under the blanket. He's going to lose his fingers.
It's for the fashion. It's the same reason he doesn't wear the hat. He's got a look to uphold.
Yeah, well, he's lucky he didn't lose his fingertips.
Yeah. He needs those fingers. Never mind.
What?
I stopped myself.
I'm actually curious.
I stopped myself.
I actually want to know where that thought was going.
Nope. I stopped it. Doesn't count. But he will need those fingers later, as I'm just saying.
I mean, there is more than one way to keep your fingers warm.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god! Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I see Chelsea's come to play. Uh-huh. Carter, drop trout.
I can't.
It's to fight the frostbite.
That's a thick waiting to happen.
I mean, physiologically, the warmest parts of our bodies are our armpits and our crotches. I'm just saying.
I mean, you're not wrong. Actually, in soccer, when we used to have practice in, like, 32-degree weather.
Where is this going?
We would wear sweatpants, and so, like, when people didn't have gloves, they would put them inside their sweatpants to keep them warm.
It's true.
What were they doing in
No,
sweatpants?
Just like in the... So you have shorts and you have sweatpants. And you would just put it in that layer between your shorts and your sweatpants to keep them warm. Never mind. Just
I would put them directly on my butt.
I'm an armpit girl, personally. A lot of this.
Anyway...
Anyway, boy, did that conversation take a turn that I was not prepared for.
So Daniel wakes up in the medbay to Teal'c's face.
Woohoo!
Teal'c is, I love it that Teal'c's like, no pleasantries, like, you're back, you're awake, I'm so glad. He's just like, Captain Carter and Colonel O'Neill did not make it through, or, you know, and then I love that Daniel just goes right with it. He's like, they were right behind us. Like, they definitely... Daniel is equally as convinced as Teal'c that they came... that they went, made it to the wormhole. That they made it through the gate.
Yep.
And so Teal'c informs him that they will be sending a probe through in a few hours. I love this scene because of how great it is that... Like, Daniel wakes up. He must be at least a little confused. Teal'c just doesn't really try to... comfort him at all, just tells him right where they are, and Daniel just is
that's
like
not
I was gonna say, I don't think Teal'c really can come. I mean, I'm not saying he can't comfort anybody, but I don't think that's his like first instinct. He's like always like, hey, this is
Mission
happening
first.
We need to fix it.
Yep. And Daniel
at
knows
least
that
in
clearly
season one.
yeah and so Daniel they're on the same page. They're
and we kind of like get a time marker in some ways, so we know it Siler said 24 hours to get the gate going. Now we know that in a couple hours we're sending a probe through, so it's clearly been at least, what, 27 hours, let's say, at the minimum, to since the last time we were working on the gate.
Damn, yep. Daniel was out for 27 hours? Holy shit. It's a long time.
Better than, yeah, it's a, I guess he's under the care of, like,
better than who?
No, I forgot that Jack was out only 2 hours. I thought, in my head, I thought 2 days, but 2 hours.
Yeah.
So that's, but at least he had medical care.
Yeah. So then we go back to Antarctica, and Jack thinks that they, or at least Sam, will be able to climb out of the crevasse that they're in. But Sam found the DHD, so that idea is on hold. It's frozen over, but it looks intact, so that's good news. And they're going to have to dig it out with just their knives, which, man, what a miserable endeavor. That would suck.
Also... I was so scared for them. Anytime I have to break up ice and stuff, I hate getting ice chips anywhere near my eye. Like, I'm always terrified. It's just going to come whacking me in the eye. And the thought of having to go at it, I was just like, oh, God, no. My worst nightmare.
They needed safety goggles for sure.
They did need safety goggles.
Sam notices that Jack is kind of favoring his chest and asks him what's going on. And he informs her that he thinks he has some broken ribs. And she's pretty pissed that he did not tell her that information. And he, of course, just blows it off because he's Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't want to worry her.
Yeah, well, and there's nothing she can do. Like, for broken ribs, or if there's something worse going on, which there is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's nothing she can do about it.
Right.
And he's like, I didn't want you to put a splint on my ribs.
It's adorable.
That was funny. It's really cute.
Oh, man. So Sam says that she's come up with what she thinks are three possible explanations for what happened. One is that Daniel misdialed and he and Teal'c are here somewhere that they can't see, which seems the most unlikely. And then two, Daniel didn't misdial. The gate malfunctioned during transit and sent Daniel and Teal'c to Earth and them to somewhere else that they don't know. And then the third is that it just malfunctioned completely and sent them to two entirely different planets. And Jack is like, and what about the fourth option? She's like, there's no fourth option.
Not this time.
Impressively, she's right about that second one is what happened. Jack decides to operate under the assumption that Daniel and Teal'c made it back to Earth and that they'll be sending a search party out.
Just like relentlessly optimistic.
Yeah.
But then Sam quickly brings him back to reality and is kind of like, but what planets are they going to send them to? There's like millions. So yeah.
And Jack's like, it's okay. They're going to search our planet first. We're going to be in the first couple
planets.
That makes
zero sense whatsoever.
But that's like his job. That's his whole point is like, we can't panic. All panic is going to do is make the situation worse. So we're just going to be relentlessly, horrifically optimistic.
And I don't think Sam doesn't seem to be on the same page to be optimistic.
Because then we get this exchange.
Even if all SG teams started searching right now, the mathematical probability of them...
Captain.
I think too much.
I mean, she does.
But she's not wrong.
But to the same point of, like, there's nothing Sam can do about Jack's broken ribs. There's nothing Sam can do about the fact that there's billions of possibilities. All they can do is put their heads down and
work. I'm just relating to Sam so much in this episode because there's so much that I can't control that I still worry about. So, like, I completely understand where she's at with, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like,
see, I'm completely a Jack in this situation. I am 100% blindly. I mean, like, I will, like, believe, like, okay, the situation sucks, acknowledge it sucks, and then continue to be blindly optimistic that everything will work out, it'll all be fine, and all you can do is, like, what's in front of you. So, like, I'm 100% not Team Jack, but, like, I relate to Jack in this particular situation. That's exactly how I handle all my crises.
Yeah. I'm honestly both of them in this, like, mixture, because usually I'm the blind optimist. Like, that is my thing. John's the worrier, and I'm always like, it'll be fine. But I also do the numbers in my head. I'm not, like, a really good statistician or anything, but I still would be like, I would be like Sam in that I would be running those numbers in my head and figuring out the odds of them finding us. So I actually don't know where I would land in this exact situation.
But that's kind of like the beauty of the episode, is that, like, we're getting both of these really opposite personalities working together, and they're not really working in opposition. They're working in balance. So Sam's moving things along in that she's panicking and thinking of the numbers and, like, thinking of the plan, and Jack is there as just this like stable constant force of, like, it's gonna be okay, and, like, we're just gonna have to put our heads down and work. We can panic a little bit later, but we gotta focus now.
Yeah.
So it's like this beautiful balance.
It is,
which we interpret as ship, and some may not. They're wrong, but this is a shippy episode.
So I also thought it was really interesting in the way that this scene played out, that when she starts, like, ramping up the panic and he just goes, Captain, and she's quiet for a second, then she goes, I think too much. Like, that exchange has happened before. Like, when he interrupts her, like, escalating panic, she knows the response to it. So I'm thinking that this is...
What did we say?
I think too much. So I thought it was a kind of a telling exchange too of the dynamic that they've already established a little bit. That this episode really shows us this dynamic, but I don't think it's the first time that they as a team have kind of had this balance. And we've seen little bits of it before now too, of the way that Jack is a very stabilizing influence on Carter.
Yeah, he is.
But now it's on a full display.
Yes. Yep. So we go back to the control room, gate room. Siler has the gate running, and they immediately dial it out, like, pretty much as soon as Siler gives them the thumbs up. Hammond is operating under the assumption that Sam and Jack could have given up the gate codes. He's telling them to be really alert. And and I love, again, that Teal'c and Daniel are both like, hell no. They would not give up the gate codes. Hammond is right to be operating under that assumption. I mean, that's usually standard operating procedure. If anybody goes missing and they have sensitive intel, you change the intel. Like, that's one of the big reasons that torture is not considered effective, because if someone falls into enemy hands, the first thing you do is change any intel that they had. And so Hammond being like, okay, beware of the SG-1 gate codes is a that's just normal military procedure. Even though we all know Sam and Jack would not give up the gate codes. Although also there's like this idea that you're weak if you break under torture, that gets perpetuated a lot in like sci-fi and military shows, which I think it's like there's no shame in breaking under torture. It's torture. That's like what it's designed to do.
Right.
And it's my understanding that everyone breaks under torture eventually, that it's just an eventuality.
If they ever did get tortured, I think Sam would be the first to break, and then Jack would break a little bit later. But I do think Sam would be the first to break, if that ever happened. But it doesn't happen, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, I would break if they just stubbed my toe in the corner. So, I mean, no shame.
Yeah. Anyway, so they send the MALP through. They see the other MALP. There's no sign of Sam and Jack, dead or alive. And but then the second MALP immediately gets fired on. And so Hammond scrubs any rescue mission to the planet.
Yeah.
And Teal'c and Daniel are heartbroken.
Yeah.
But again, Hammond is making all the right calls as a leader.
I love this episode because everyone's like core personalities are on display. And like, you've got Hammond being like military man leader, making all the like by the book, but also a perfect mix of like by the book, but gut calls for his team. You've got Daniel and Teal'c working together, like relentlessly faithful and loyal and searching. Like everyone's personalities, like core personalities, are just like perfectly on display in this episode.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That's one of the reasons I love
it. Thank you.
So wise. So we cut back to Antarctica and Jack is cooking dinner. Soup. Yeah. Sam wants to keep digging and he insists that she needs to eat before it gets cold. Also, this was a pet peeve of mine in this episode. The sterno, like the oil for their cooking kit is like the most precious resource they have, and they kept leaving it on when they weren't using it. So like Jack's cooking the soup and he takes it off and he left the sterno running the entire time that he was like dishing it up for them. And I was sitting there like, what are you doing? Turn it off.
Because Chelsea, it was the lone source of light in the entire
episode. Oh, well, for them. Okay, I was like, they had flashlights, but no, I get it.
Well, and also just this episode is so visually dark as well.
Yes.
Oh, well, that, like, all we had was this, like, dying battery light, some, like, light effect that shows you it's cold, and a dying sterno. That's it.
Yeah.
I see your point, Chels.
Is it while they're eating or before they start eating that Sam wants to check Jack again to make sure that he's okay? Or is that later?
I think it's after he says that his melted ice is to die for.
His jokes are so dumb. Like, I can't.
They're terrible.
But he keeps making
her... And
yet
very effective.
They keep making her smile.
Which is...
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, I say, which is what he's trying to do.
Yeah. But yeah, so then Sam does want to check on his injuries again, and he brushes her off.
I mean, again, that's fair because she can't do anything. Yeah. It's just something that's happening.
So Sam has further considered what the malfunction could have been. And she goes off on this really awesome technobabble that actually sounds like super coherent and great. So basically, she's positing that the wormhole could have jumped like a lightning bolt does from one point to another.
She's not
and
wrong.
She is exactly right. She's so brilliant. And she posits that it would have gone nearby. Like, if you know, energy is going one direction and it jumps to a new spot, it's going to go to, like, the next available conductor. And so she posits that they will have been nearby the Earth, or they're like somewhere. And she says, basically, if the people at the SGC draw that same conclusion that I drew, then that really narrows down their search and we have better options. So like she's being a little more optimistic.
Mm-hmm. But with now science behind her.
Right. But then she's also worried because Jack is not looking good. He's clearly suffering.
Yeah.
So it's for her, I think it's a mixture of like she now has a logical reason to believe there's a chance they could be found, but she's also terrified because she has no idea what the actual conditions of Jack's medical situation is bad. So we go back to the SGC where Daniel and Teal'c are working the problem. Teal'c floats the idea that the wormhole could have just blinked out while they were still in it and they're dead, which is like a very real possibility. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Daniel admits that he has also considered that, but it's not really worth investigating because if they're, you know, they still have to consider the other options.
Right. Exhaust all options before giving up.
Yeah. So Daniel considers that the malfunction, because they know on their end that the gate malfunctioned and they have, so they know they came flying through. They know that it like flicked, that people can tell them was doing weird stuff. And so Daniel considers that, hey, maybe whatever went wrong sent them somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so Daniel he's getting there. He's not as quick as Sam to the point, but he's getting there. And he basically is like, but we got to narrow it down. Like he has the same thing that Sam, I love that we kind of get to see Daniel kind of eventually gets to where Sam gets, but it takes him a little longer. Mm-hmm. And he needs some outside help. Like Siler has to help him get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that Daniel and Teal'c both acknowledge that they could be dead, but they're like, they kind of like, they could be dead. We're just still going to keep looking.
Yeah, exactly. That's the SG1 way. You don't give up on people. You don't leave them behind. You just exhaust all options before you declare anyone absolutely 100% dead.
Yep. So then we go back to Antarctica where they are still digging. Uh-huh. And Sam finds a serpent guard body.
Yep.
Which is, I don't know, interesting, but not useful information.
It's like more like a piece of a bigger puzzle that we get later. Mm-hmm. Like once Daniel and Siler and Teal'c start figuring out like, oh, gee, wouldn't the Goa'uld come back and put another planet, like put another Stargate here? Yeah. And then we're like, oh, yeah, there was that serpent guard over there. Yeah. But it doesn't help them.
It doesn't help Sam and Jack at all. But as the viewers, it gives us more context as we get further into the episode. So then we go back to Daniel, who's now walking through kind of his theories with Siler, who is presumably after Sam, the next expert on the gate. So Siler is like, he's not able to give them as much information as Sam had. Like when he's talking through this, he doesn't have the same level of detail that she does. But basically, he is able to say that he doesn't think that if something caused the stream to have like more energy or whatever, that it would just disappear, that it would go discharge somewhere. Like energy doesn't just like stop. Right. It had to go somewhere.
Right.
Right.
Like, Siler's clearly a smart dude who gets the basic mechanics and theory of the Stargate and understands general, you know, physics and whatnot. It's just that, I mean, who is Sam? Let's be real. No one's as good as Sam.
No.
So, but Siler's doing a really good job. He's explaining. He's techno-babbling, minus the babbling. He's just technoing for Daniel and Hammond. And it's allowing them to start coming to their own conclusions.
Yeah. Plus, he got the gate back up and running in 24 hours, which is impressive.
Yes.
So Daniel then wants to search the planets that are close to the path between those two planets that they... So between Earth and PC4 something.
Mm-hmm. PCP something. I'm just kidding. Not PCP. Don't do drug skins.
So that narrows it down. So Sam is right. Like, they figured out the same thing she figured out, and now they have a much narrower field of planets to search. Yes. So, good job, Daniel. I mean, it's not right, but well-reasoned. You're getting there. You're getting
you get a you tried star.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, though, he came to the same conclusion as Sam. So Sam was just equally as wrong. I mean...
No, they were both right that it jumped the closest place. They just...
Didn't know it was on Earth. Yes.
Yes. So they did succeed in getting the DHD uncovered, and Sam has identified the point of origin pretty quickly. And then Jack coughs up some blood. So...
Oh, Jack.
Not
he's
great.
He's a hot mess.
He is.
Yeah, he is.
And of course he doesn't say anything, and Sam doesn't say anything. She just kind of like shakes her head, but then she's like, just got to get him the hell out of here. She starts dialing out. So she dials out, she hits the button, and it doesn't work.
And she's so mad.
She's so upset.
I don't think we ever hear Sam curse as much as we do in this episode. There's lots of damn it's, like...
And God.
Like, God's and damn it's in here. I mean...
Because nothing's working, and she's... Oh. And it's supposed to work. Everything she's doing is correct, and she knows it is.
And she's so frustrated. I just love that, like, this is the episode where it's, like... This is where we hear her do all the, like...
Oh, of course.
Swearing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, plus there's the context of she just watched Jack cough up blood, and she knows that they are
ticking clock.
And there's nothing she can do for him.
And she's already kind of in a panic mode, and now that he's coughed up blood, it's like ramped up her kind of panic to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the world's most dramatic, slowest dial of any DHD we've ever had in the entire series. It is just like almost filmed in slow-mo. It's like, oh, is it gonna work? No.
I noted that when it was happening, and I decided that her hands must be so cold,
mm-hmm.
and she wants to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because this isn't like a DHD that she's familiar with and whatever. But you're right. It is very dramatic and slow. So Sam immediately wants to then start digging to the control panel. She posits that it's probably something simple. She can fix it, and she just needs to get to it, and Jack insists that first they need to sleep.
Can I just say, I think this is one of the first times that we see Sam try to work through the night to solve a problem. And it happens when Jack is also in danger. And that just seems to be like a thread that continues on throughout the series. I'm just saying, like, that it's... And he's not there to make her go to sleep most of the time.
But this time he is.
But this time he is.
Well, and also we have no real gauge. Like, the last time we checked in with Daniel, it was, 27-ish hours. And we don't know how long it's been since Daniel woke up, and they've had enough time to send in a MALP, think about new, like, who knows how long, 48 hours, maybe?
To dig several cubic feet of ice with knives? Like, it's been a while.
And, like, we know they only have 3 days of supplies, and, like, they still have supplies left at that point, so I'm putting it somewhere in, like, the 48-ish hour... 48 to 55 hours, maybe, of being awake, which is insane.
Yeah, and so Jack says as much, that they've been awake for a very long time, and that it'll still be there in the morning. And Sam then kind of asks, like, what about you?
Yeah. I really wanted him to be like, yeah, I'll be there too. Like, it's gonna be okay.
She has tears in her eyes.
It was so soft.
Yes.
She's so worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
Jess, did you happen to read the solitudes part in your book today? Did anything?
I sure did.
Was there anything? So,
there's not tons about the snuggling. Is that what we're getting at? But there's a lot. Well, I didn't want to like read it because I think everyone knows the story. The main anecdote in the companion book relates to Amanda tapping, calling RDA make useless.
Okay.
That's the main story in this, which we're at that part.
Yeah.
Do you want me to read it? Does everyone know it?
I can probably play it.
The only other thing she talks about is saying that the sidearm line was not ad-libbed. It was actually written in there because Brad Wright picked up on the sense of humor between... That Amanda Tapping and Richard Dean Anderson have a shared sense of humor, and so he wrote it in there specifically for them.
Huh.
And then just Amanda Tapping talking about how amazing it was that she was in a helicopter ride and how dangerous it was, and there's like avalanches going off.
That's bonkers.
That is bonkers.
All right. So if you haven't heard the story of the MacGyver moment in the while they were filming this, it's one that Amanda Tapping tells with some frequency because they were actually filming on like a frozen soundstage. And Martin Wood had asked Amanda Tapping to maybe find a moment to do something funny to help uplift the spirits of all these freezing people who were having to film them. And so she did this moment. I'm going to play the clip on YouTube. I encourage you to go find it on YouTube or look up Amanda Tapping telling the story. It's not hard to find. But so this is what Amanda Tapping did to lighten the mood on set.
We spent 7 years on MacGyver and you can't figure this one out? We got belt buckles and shoelaces and a piece of gum. Build a nuclear reactor, for crying out loud. You used to be MacGyver, McGadget, McGimmick. Now you're Mr. McUseless. You're gone. Stuck on a glacier with MacGyver.
and pretty good.
Apparently he is like stone faced throughout the whole thing and she thought she was in trouble.
He like did not break a smile at all.
Well, he turns like at the end of the clip to look at the camera.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, but so when Amanda Tapping tells it, she talks about how she was certain she'd just lost her job because she'd insulted the star who's also an executive producer. So it's a great moment of building, I think, some of the chemistry between those two as well.
Yeah.
And establishing the rapport that carries them through the rest of the series.
Well, and it's also important to note that, like, you may think that they're shooting on a set. They're shooting on location.
I don't think it was on location. I think it was frozen sound. Like, they had a refrigerated soundstage for that.
They are, for some of it, yes. But for parts of it, they're also, they went to Pemberton Ice Field, which is north of Whistler. They plonked her down into an ice field. This is when she's up on the...
when she's outside.
Yes. So she's actually out, like, in ice and cold and snow. And when she's out on the... what do you...
No, thank you. No, thank you.
I was like, why are you shaking your head?
No, thank you.
And then when she's... This is out of place. But while she is on the little, like, ledge looking down, like, she's going to go back to Jack later in the episode, she actually... That's literally on... She's on, like, a ledge of some description. Ooh. And she was terrified she was going to fall off.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think we're about to declare... Hammond's about to declare Sam and Jack MIA.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Daniel got very upset. And then Hammond quickly reassured him that just because they're MIA does not mean that we aren't looking for them.
Yes. I love that the outcome of this scene is him being like, missing. I'm missing something.
Epiphany.
It's like the most, because a lot of times you get those moments in TV shows where like someone says something and the word sparks something unrelated in someone else's head. And that was like the most ridiculous, useless one I've ever seen, where it's like, missing. Yes, I'm missing something.
It's like, yes, we know. You're missing Sam and Jack. Yeah. Oh, Daniel.
So that, I mean, because that's all we get there. Then it goes immediately back to Antarctica.
Mean back to Snuggle Central.
Sam and Jack very closely snuggled. Sam is basically on top of Jack.
Mm-hmm.
But can you blame her?
God, no.
Clearly, none of us would blame her.
I mean, like, I feel like we could spend 20 minutes, like, alone breaking down, like, hand placement and head placement and, like, where their legs are probably intertwined a little bit beneath that sleeping bag. I mean, we won't. You get the picture. But still, they're snuggled up real close.
So, I have this, basically the whole scene in parts. How much of it do we want to play?
All of it. Go.
So, starts off with Jack waking up.
Much as I might otherwise think this is nice.
Shh. Try to sleep.
All right. Do we want to talk about that before we move on?
Yes, I do. First of all, you've got Jack saying, I would otherwise find this nice.
Yep.
Therefore, okay, self-explanatory. Someone would love to snuggle up with his second in command in any other circumstance. Okay. Two, She shushes him and tells him to go back to sleep. Like, if that isn't the most intimate shit I've ever heard in my life, that is like waking up and like having like your boyfriend be behind you and he's like, babe, and you're like, shh, go back to sleep. It's I'm tired. That's what that is. That is 100% from experience. That's what that is. Shut up and go to sleep. I'm tired. I'm sleeping. You were out. You fell asleep. We're sleeping now. Shh.
Also, it really kind of echoes the Broke a Divide moment.
Thank you.
Of Jack being like, not like this.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Any other circumstance in which I am not your commanding officer, we're not fighting for our lives, etc., we would be dating and engaged right now, is what I heard.
I mean, in every other reality, you're not wrong.
Uh-huh. It's true. I'm sorry. And later, and in this reality, we are not wrong.
Yes, it just takes us like 8 years to get there.
Okay, so I'll keep playing the clip.
So, Joey, hey.
You're exhausted. He passed out. I just thought we had to combine body heat or we mm-hmm. wouldn't make it through the night.
It's fine.
Yeah, it is.
It's just very hard to sleep with broken ribs when someone's lying on you.
Sorry. Oh, Sam. All right, so we're going to like splint your leg and make you be in terrible pain. And now we're going to lay on your broken ribs.
Also, it is legit so hard to sleep with broken ribs. Mm-hmm. Someone's laying on top of you or not. Poor mm-hmm. Jack.
Also, this is the first of two incidences in which Jack passes out. And Sam's instinct is to just snuggle on up into him and, like, wrap herself around him. Like, because she says that he passed out, so it's like, and he obviously is confused about why they're cuddling, so it's like,
it's for like, body yeah. heat, Jess.
Definitely, it's just, for survival.
Just
only.
For body heat, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely is.
It is.
For survival.
It genuinely is for survival, no, it is. But then also, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's only for survival. It's both.
They're definitely not mutually exclusive.
No.
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 Mm-mm.
So then Sam carefully slides off to the side of him, but stays really still close.
Mm-hmm.
And we get this adorable moment.
Colonel.
It's my sidearm, I swear. Okay, Clay. Please.
No, Clay.
It's like the most perfect exchange.
I'm now curious because Chelsea, did you say that the sidearm was in there? It was written in there.
Just or was did. That?
Okay, so
Brad Wright wrote it for them specifically. This is from the companion, and it says Brad Wright. It was a major coup for the writers who discovered their sense of humor, their meaning RDA and ATs, and brought it into that situation. It was not an ad lib. That sidearm line was actually written in there.
Okay, yeah. But was the no giggling line ad-libbed?
I don't know.
Because that feels like it's a little ad-libbed, to me at least.
I don't know.
All
I know is Sam's very casual, calm, what she thinks is his erection pressing into her, is just, oh, Colonel?
So are we certain that's what she's going to ask there?
100%. What else would she be asking?
I don't know.
What's poking her?
Yeah. The way she goes, oh, like, this is like, oh, this is a thing, a reality we have to face here. Colonel?
Maybe. I mean, maybe it speaks to the relationship. Because if it were me, I would definitely just ignore it. Like, I would not say anything.
I feel like I would acknowledge
it. Yeah, I think I would acknowledge it. Yeah. I would say something.
You're snuggling up to someone who you okay, I feel like even if feelings are involved, can we at least agree that there's an attraction there? Mm-hmm. Like, up,
I mean, we can all agree that. I don't
yes,
know.
Yes, no. But I mean, like, seriously, like, canonically, up until this point, I feel like there's enough there that we could agree there's like a flirtation crush vibe going.
I feel like we already established they wanted to bang on the freaking briefing room table when they first met.
Absolutely. So now we're 17 episodes in and you're snuggled up to this guy and there's a dick pressing into you. I just feel like you have to acknowledge it. I would. I think every... Okay, we'll put it on Twitter as a poll. If you're snuggled up next to somebody and you feel an erection, are you A?
Are you going to put it on there right now? Because I'm going to go vote, so I'm ready.
I'm not going to really do it.
I wouldn't.
She could have ignored it. You wouldn't.
Okay.
No, like, the dude is dying, and who knows?
Dying
like,
to
so
fuck you.
I don't know. Maybe with Jack I would, because he kind of was snarky with her about the whole, like, tank top and making out with him thing. So maybe in the context of that relationship, I would. But otherwise, like, I would acknowledge that it's a physiologic response, and this is less than ideal circumstances, and he's clearly not trying to do anything appropriate, and I don't want to embarrass him, like, or make him feel uncomfortable, or that he's made me feel uncomfortable. I don't know.
That's fair.
But again, in the context of their relationship, I think maybe it makes sense in terms of he did give her kind of a hard time about jumping into the locker room. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I also feel like this is like putting the shoe on the other foot. This is maybe Sam's way of like lightening the mood. Mm-hmm. This is an awkward thing. We're going to acknowledge it and like laugh about it. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Calculated risk.
Yeah.
But it's classic. It's the line that I feel like you could almost pass off this episode up until this point as like, wow, like what a great team episode. Like everyone's bonding. And then you got these two attractive characters who clearly have an attraction between them, snuggled up together, talking about erections. And like, I just feel like at that point you're like, oh, I see what they're setting up here.
Yep. So then at the end of that conversation, we get Sam.
If we don't make it, I won't have any regrets. You?
I regret dying.
I love that line. There is a fantastic fic. I'm pretty sure it's SALR323.
Oh, okay.
And it's really, really good. I'm not going to read it on here because I feel like we should ask permission before we read people's fics on here. But you should check it out. It's called Retrospective. It's one of my favorite fics. But there's a little blurb about that particular line, and I fucking love it.
So basically just that we think that that moment is indicative of Jack as a person, that of course he doesn't think you can just die without any regrets. Like, here's a guy who knows the meaning of the word regret.
Right. Absolutely. And he knows what it means, like, to come, like, to want to die. Like, and then to come back from that desire to die and, like, keep living life. And now that he's, like, still fresh off that, like, no, I have something to live for and I have something, like, worth fighting for. Fuck yeah, I'm going to regret dying. Like, it could be read as flippant, but I feel like just the way that particular fic author, like, framed it, that changed the way I viewed that line.
Yeah. Well, and I also think we do kind of get further insight to how young and naive Sam is, that her response is to that she wants to say that she doesn't have any regrets. And maybe she doesn't have any regrets or any deep enough to be giving her pause at this moment. But yes, yeah, so agreed. It's a beautiful moment between them. And I think, again, kind of highlights the different people that they are in these moments and yet how respectful and sweet they are with each other in spite of those differences.
Absolutely.
So then we get a really kind of almost a weird, not quite a montage. We go back to the gate room and we pan up past the control room where Daniel is looking very upset and like frazzled, and he's got a little bit of scruff on his face and he's drinking coffee and he clearly hasn't slept. And it pans up past him up to the window of the briefing room where we see Hammond similarly looking upset.
Uh-huh.
And then we get the shot of a bunch of soldiers, airmen. I wasn't clear if they were Marines or Air Force, but they come through the gate shaking their head. And Harriman also looks very upset. And that's it. Like, so we just get those like three shots. Everyone's feeling a little dejected.
So in the companion book, Gary Jones is still credited as technician.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So he still technically isn't Harriman.
I wrote that down when I saw that in the credits at the end.
Ever since that we went to the con and Gary Jones told the story about how he actually didn't have a name until the 1969 episode, uh-huh. I just take such extreme notice of it now. It's like, Jesus Christ, okay, no, we didn't have a name for him. He was just that guy, that tech.
Yeah. Well, and I keep looking for a name tag on his shirt. Yeah. My son walked into the room I was watching today, and I kept rewinding on that scene to see if there was a name tag. And he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Which is wild because he doesn't have a name tag, but Siler has a name, like has his name on his uniform.
Yeah.
But this is his first episode. But they also said his name, though, too, right? They actually specifically said Siler's name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like it would make sense for him to have a name tag, whereas Gary Jones doesn't have a name. Therefore, his name tag should just say technician.
Yeah. I think we kind of didn't mention that. So part of when Daniel was pitching these rescue missions to Hammond, he mentioned that because Hammond makes the very valid point of why wouldn't they have just come home if that were the mm-hmm. case? And Daniel is like, we came plying through the Stargate. I woke up hours later with no recollection of hitting the ramp. Like, they could be very seriously injured, which also brings up the point of when we go search these planets, we don't have to go very far. Like, if they're not within easy walking distance of the gate, then they're probably not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very quickly searching these planets. It seems like basically sending probes and... then pop sometimes in, sending out. People go, and then coming back. And they are not finding them so far.
Nope.
And then we go back to an even more distraught Sam, who is pissed that she can't get the DHD to work. Which at this point, the DHD seems to be locked in. Like, she dialed Earth, and then it kind of dialed up on the Stargate, and then everything's just frozen there. And, and she can't get it. To work.
And she's cursing again.
Yeah.
We're a lot of damn it's, and she's like so mad at herself. Like, I feel like it's all this internal. Like, she's obviously frustrated at the situation, but she's more mad that she cannot figure it out. Like, she has gone over it in her head over and over again, and it should be working, and she's not seeing it.
Yeah. So her yelling seems to wake Jack up, and he radios her, and her response is immediate and adorable, Pavlovian. Where she goes scrambling down to him and, like, falls on the way. And I texted you guys, I was like, the way she scrambled down when he called for her, though.
It's totally a normal response, let me just say. Super normal.
And she gets down there, and so then... Jack doesn't just let go of the fact that they basically were sleeping together the night before. He says, I'm usually the first one up, which I have questions about this line.
Why?
No, I just like, so do you think this is him just like generally making a reference to the fact that he's a morning person and he's usually like the first person awake in general? Is he talking about past relationships, or is this a reference to like they've spent nights off world together before and he usually wakes up before her? Like,
that's how I take it. Yeah, it's where they've spent, you know, the night off world and he's usually the first one up. I think no matter what time he goes to bed, even if he has like the last watch, I think he's still the first one up at all times.
Yeah, that's how I took it too.
Okay, so that was my question.
But I mean, he could also be the first one up in the morning, just in general at home.
I feel like there's like a kind of stereotype too that like most military people are morning people at some point, just because of like routine and schedule, and like they're used to getting up at a certain hour, and like there's not really a lot of like sleeping in because you get used to like the regimen of
being awake.
Yeah So Sam is very upset about his injuries. We get a moment where this is Sam being very upset about Jack's injuries.
You're bleeding internally. I don't know how badly. Your broken leg may already be frostbitten, I can't tell. I've been trying to warm it up with the last of our cooking sterno, but that's about it.
What's the bad news? Help me up.
No, sir. You need to heal. That's an order.
I give the orders around here.
No, doctor's orders.
I love that she turns that back on him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Sam's almost at the end of her rope at this at this point, because she can't get the DHT to work. He's basically dying, and she has, there's nothing she can do about it. And she's done everything that she can, and so all she can do is go down there and just rattle off what's wrong with him,
and what she's done to try and, like, I've tried to help you, but we're down to the end of the supplies. I can't get the DHT to work. And, like, again, all the fucking credit to Mina Tapping for, like, portraying both I'm fucking freezing cold and I'm shivering and my voice is shaking because I'm cold, but my voice is also shaking because I'm upset and there's tears in my eyes and I'm about to watch this person who I care for, whether it be because of, sorry, my cats.
Sorry, your cats are fighting.
That this person that you care for is, like, dying in front of you. You're their only hope for yourself and them, and you're running out of time and options, and it's coming up to this plan B they start talking about of Sam picking up the radio, the last of supplies, and trying to go for help and leaving Jack behind. And that's an impossible decision to be faced with.
Yeah, very much a lot of credit goes to Amanda Tapping for this episode. I think, I mean, Richard Dean Anderson does a great job too. But,
oh, totally.
But I feel like there is more burden on Amanda Tapping because, I mean, Jack's mostly just
chilling.
And yeah.
Is that clip the same one that says I should have gotten you out of here by now?
I think
yes.
So. I think
it's in this scene. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But yeah. We didn't pull it.
I didn't pull that part.
But she says, yeah, I should have gotten you out by now. Like, again, that's that, like, that anger, like, turned inside that she's, like, blaming herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, she apologizes to him, and then, but he's still confident that she's going to get them out.
Unwavering faith.
Well, and she then lets on that she's been working for 12 hours. So Jack has been asleep for more than that because she slept.
Yeah.
And then she woke up and he's been sleeping for 12 hours and she's been working frantically by herself alone with, like, no support and no one to talk to for 12 hours and failing. And, like,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
To be honest, I don't think Sam slept very much at all.
No. Probably.
Like, maybe like 2 hours or so. And then, like, immediately went back to work.
Yeah. And she's just, like, so frustrated because she does not know why it's not working. Mm-hmm. I wrote in my notes, I said, I don't blame Sam for not figuring out what's actually happening here. Like,
oh, totally.
Of course she wouldn't. But I wonder if she ends up having nightmares about not trying another address when dialing Earth didn't work. Just because that's the kind of thing I could see her really second-guessing herself about. Like, mm-hmm. They get out. They survive, and it's like, I don't know if you've ever had one of those things where something works out for you, but you still perseverate on the mistakes you made. And mm-hmm. It's like, I could definitely see Sam questioning herself because, like, it would have been a semi-logical thing to do of, oh, we dialed Earth and it didn't work. She could have thought, like, maybe not even known, oh, we jumped to another gate on Earth. There's no reason she would assume that. But right. She could maybe assume maybe there's something wrong with our gate and try a different address. And again, I don't think anyone in their right mind would blame her for not doing that. She only really ended up having 2 tries at dialing anyway. But I could definitely see her beating herself up for that later. Because if she'd done that, if she'd just dialed, like, and I don't know if this point in the program they knew other gate addresses, but you'd think she'd at least know, like, the Land of Light or someplace that they've been to, that she could have maybe dialed one of those safe planets instead and gotten them there.
I wonder, too, if it's because, like, because the point of origin was different, if she was concerned that maybe the address would be different. That's not how
it works. I don't think that's how that works.
No, but, it's not.
But don't you still, even on different planets, don't you still have to compensate for stellar drift?
Not if a DHD is there.
Not the DHD
does that automatically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I guess it was just like a case of like tunnel vision of just like, we have to get home, we have to get home, we have to get home.
Right. Like I said, I don't blame her for trying.
No, that. Totally.
But I think it would have worked if she dialed somewhere else. They would have been able to get to a different planet that at least wasn't frozen. Which wouldn't necessarily have solved their problem. Like, Jack would still be bleeding internally. Like, they'd still have to get home. But,
Well, I mean, you could theoretically think that if the gate doesn't open for Earth, then it might not open for somewhere else.
Right.
So, right. Maybe that's why she didn't try another gate.
No, I genuinely think it is just a case of tunnel vision. And I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but, like, I'm still terrible at math. But in school, when I would get to, like, math tests, and I would get a problem in front of me, and I would be so certain that I knew the equation to use in this math test, and I would plug in the numbers, and it wasn't coming out, and, like, my answer wasn't any of the A, B, C, D options. And like, the more I tried to fix my equation and see where I went wrong, the worse it was getting, the more frustrated I was getting, until all I could think about was, why the fuck won't this equation work? When the answer was, I was using the wrong equation all along, but I was so certain that my initial assumption was correct. And so I just feel like it's like that mounting pressure of, we just have to get home. This is how we've always gotten home. Now there's a Jack bleeding out behind me, and like, the things that I know should be working aren't working, and I literally can't think of anything else right now.
Yeah. Well, and she is also recovering from, like, she was knocked unconscious. She also had at least a mild concussion. Like,
and it's fucking cold. Yeah. She's in Antarctica, and like, I don't know about you, but like, my brain function just starts going when it hits like 50 degrees. So I can't, Texas, okay. But like, I can't imagine like being in Antarctica and trying to solve complex physics problems.
No, I think Sam really ultimately does everything right here.
Yeah.
And I'm not throwing shade at her at all, but I do think she's the kind of person who would second guess herself after this.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then we get Jack mentioning the plan B, and Sam basically says, well, we'll only go if we both go. And right. Jack's response to that is, I'll race you.
Still making her laugh.
He is still making her laugh, but he's also fully knows that he's not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
We go back to the gate room, but Teal'c comes through the Stargate carrying Major Castleman, fireman style, over his shoulders, and still no sign of Sam or Jack. And there weren't hostiles. Apparently Castleman just fell off of a ledge.
Yeah.
But Hammond still thinks that apparently they've tried all of the places close places that they thought it would be. He's calling off the search. And of course, Daniel and Teal'c are not pleased, because when Teal'c walks through carrying the injured dude, he's like, I'm ready to go out again.
Well, we know that Hammond doesn't take that decision lightly either. Like, it's something that he doesn't want to do. But, I mean, if you've exhausted all your options and all the planets that are close, I mean, there isn't really anything else you can do except send random people to other planets. And by then, you're just wasting resources and time and manpower.
And you're risking people's lives.
Exactly.
Because this time, it was just him slipping in off a ledge. But what if you run into, like, a horde of Jaffa or hostiles, and at some point you do have to make the call.
Exactly. Yep. Hammond always has very good reasons for the decisions that he makes, even when SG-1 doesn't like them.
That is why he is the general.
Yeah.
Nobody else is.
So then we go back to Antarctica, and Sam is talking to herself, kind of talking through the problem, and she realizes she needs to reset the DHD. And so basically it seems like she unplugs it and plugs it back in. Is that what happens here?
I wrote down typical IT solution. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
I feel like she just pulled the crystal out and then put it back in.
Yep. And it works. It resets the DHD, and we get another very slow dial. Again, I think she's being deliberate. Like, she thinks, maybe I screwed it up last time. Maybe I put it in wrong. She goes super slow, hits the middle button, and it starts shaking. It's like knocking ice down on them. And then we get a quick cut to the SGC, and the SGC is also shaking. And Daniel has like a Jurassic Park moment where he notices the glass shaking.
The glass. I also wrote down Jurassic Park.
Poor Sam.
She's so, she is beside herself.
No, like,
well, because it worked.
Yeah.
I know.
It worked, but it didn't work at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like this time we got movement. The gate actually moved like it was trying to do something, whereas all of the chevrons just locked last time and nothing happened. Something happened this time, but then nothing happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And like that's it. Like she doesn't know what to do now, and to like this means that for sure Jack's gonna die and probably she's gonna die.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now it's time to call in plan B.
We get Daniel saying figuring out that they ruled out a world that they shouldn't have ruled out.
Yeah.
Which go Daniel. But yeah, so then Sam goes to check on Jack. She apologizes for not getting him out, and Jack tells her that it's not her fault. Which of course
Can we pause and talk about that?
Of course.
I love that he absolves her of any blame or like wrongdoing. That like he doesn't for one second blame her or think that she didn't do absolutely everything in her power to get them both out.
Yeah.
And it's important for him that she know that.
Right. Yeah. And even though she rationally knows it, I still think that if something terrible had happened to Jack, she would have never let herself, never forgiven herself for not figuring out the problem.
Nope. It's, so Jack tells her to go. And, guys, this. All right, I'm going to play the clip and try and keep it together.
I'm not.
Jess is already hiding.
Plan B. Go.
No, sir.
Sam. Mm. I'm dying. Follow my order. Please.
Sir.
Please.
I'm fine. This is fine.
It's what gets us, guys. Is it the Sam? Is it the double please? I don't.
It's so. I think it's for me. It's that he wants her to leave because he doesn't want her to die with him in this crevice, even though she's still probably going to die. He wants at least to have that somewhat hope that she'll get out of this, and. The fact that she was kind of like, no, I'm not leaving you by yourself, because that's one of SG-1's fundamental rules. And then he begs her to leave. It's a lot.
With her name.
With her name.
Because he starts with Captain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He starts and Captain Plan B.
He gives her an order.
And it doesn't work.
Straight up says no.
And then all pretenses fall, and it's just Jack talking to Sam.
Begging her. Oh, God. Begging her to go as his final dying wish. Like,
yes.
That I'm dying, follow my order.
Please.
Oh my gosh. Please.
These, like, very sincere pleases. Not one.
Oh, yeah.
Two. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. It's so good.
I put in my notes, did I have to pause this conversation multiple times to collect myself? Yes, I did.
I just wrote, this is fine, over and over again.
I just wrote the quote down. I was just like, I'm fine, it's fine. She said, please. And I texted both of you.
Sam.
Yeah, it's anytime he uses her first name, it is just like dagger to the heart. Like, it is, ugh.
I think anytime either one of them uses their first name.
Oh, yes.
Oh, and their faces, though, like...
It was so good from both of them.
It's perfect.
I just wish it were. I understand why it was dark. I wish it was lighter.
Mm-hmm.
So
we do all the gift making.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
So Sam puts his radio in his hand and heads out, which can we just take a minute to appreciate that Sam, Captain Carter, is okay with disobeying Colonel O'Neill's orders.
As she almost always is.
But she does respect the dying wishes of Jack.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Because she does. She gets up and she leaves, even though we know she doesn't want to. Like, and I think one of the only reasons she does is because she hopes beyond hope that she can maybe find help for him, too.
Yeah. I think she's given up on the DHD and the Stargate, and she at this point is, she just needs to try something different.
Yep. So after our hearts have been ripped out, we go back to Daniel, who brings up, and I love that this gets addressed. Daniel talks about how they've encountered on other planets cultures that presumably came from Earth after the Egypt Stargate was buried and not being mm-hmm. used. And so how are those people being taken to other places? And they've kind of tried to talk about parallel development of these planets and make it make sense. But now he's saying maybe after there was another gate that mm-hmm. was being used after that gate was buried or before that gate was in use in Egypt.
Well, because uh-huh. they know that the Gould didn't create the Stargates.
Yes. Yeah, that the Gould may have brought a Stargate to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Teal'c basically confirms that a Gould would do that if they didn't have access to the one there, didn't know there already was one there, they would bring a gate to the planet.
I also do feel like it kind of makes sense that, like, most planets probably have multiple Stargates. Like, I know it's not, like, confirmed in canon, but I just feel like, given the size of any planet, mm-hmm. like, it just seems bonkers to have one Stargate. Like, if the only Stargate that we have on Earth is Antarctica or Egypt, like, if we had one or the other and the Gould came, we'd be fine. Like, who's exploring the entire planet? Like, I just feel like at some point, like, you just assume, like, there's kind of, like, that joke that, like, SG-1 really only explores, like, a couple clicks in any direction of any planet. But God knows, like, what's on the other side of the planet. Yeah. Like, who knows?
Maybe it's just a luck of the draw of which gate you get every time. So, like, maybe there are four on one planet, but it's like, yeah. Which one am I going to hop into?
Right. Well, in the future, when we do functionally have two gates, they mentioned that the one with the DHD takes precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know how it would work if you had multiple Stargates with DHDs, each of them. Jess, it's interesting you mentioned the exploring. This might be getting a little bit ahead of it, but when Sam gets up and stands up and then she concludes that it's an ice planet, I put the same thing. I was like, SG-1 is just so in the habit of, like, looking around and being like, okay, that's the planet, guys.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, to be fair, though, if all you see is snow and ice, like, I'm going to assume that there's nothing else there.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's... And to be fair, she's in, like, no. Well, but no, I see what you're saying.
Well, and obviously it's irrelevant, like, whether it's an right. ice planet or an ice continent, which it is an ice continent.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant to her. Like, the situation is that she can't get help. Like,
right.
Unless there was, like, a cabin right outside of their glacier.
Yeah.
With, like, a fireplace going and, like, medical supplies, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. Sam, well, but before that, while she's still climbing out, she checks in with Jack, and Jack tells her that it was an honor serving with her, ugh. Which is also fine. We're fine.
That's his goodbye.
Yep. Yeah. So the when he says it's been an honor serving with you, her response is yes, sir. That's all she says.
Yeah. Yeah. She refuses because she doesn't want to say goodbye yet.
Yeah. So back in the SGC, they're looking for signals, like SG-1's emergency signals. They're searching all over. Sam and Jack aren't using those kind of signals because they don't know they're on Earth. Like, right. they don't know there's right. anybody to be looking for them. So Daniel mentions that, hey, if the other gate was shaking like this, it was shaking here when it was going off. And he talks about how, hey, our gate used to shake like crazy when we used it. And we get a little, it's like two continuity things that yep. we get answers to that yep. they added dampeners.
Yep.
To make that not happen, but if the other gate didn't have those, maybe it was shaking, and would that show up on a seismograph? And Hammond is so excited. He's yes. so pleased.
Well, like, way to go, Daniel. Like, Daniel, like, steps sure. up and, like, really connects these logical dots to get them where they need to go.
Yep. And so then we get this great exchange, which I love.
What happens when you dial your own phone number?
Wrong person to ask.
What happens when you dial your own phone number?
You get a busy signal.
Exactly. What else could cause a vibration like that unless they were trying to dial home? They couldn't get through. I mean, even if their seventh symbol looked different, the coordinates of the two gates would still be exactly the same.
So, did y'all ever dial your own phone number? Like, when?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Okay. No,
who
I was
didn't?
Just... Right? People that didn't have a landline like now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, young people.
Because I think if you call your phone number now, it just goes to your voicemail.
Yeah. But I love that he first asks Teal'c.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
It's a great moment. And they're so excited that they're figuring it out. But yeah, so then we go back to Sam making it to the surface. She tells Jack she's going to get help. And then she gets the one more stab in the gut of realizing that, nope, she is not going to get help.
Her face just falls.
Yeah, it's rough. It's really rough.
Because now you're completely 100% out of options. Yep. All you can do is go back in the crevice.
Yep.
And die.
Yep.
Harriman did like a search of seismic activity. Mm-hmm. And I love, so he's not Harriman, technician. He's so excited, like, that he finds a match. He's like, it matches down to the second of the, you know, when you guys came through, plus the 4 a.m. time that Daniel noticed. And it's only 50 miles from McMurdo, which is very convenient.
Yes, it is.
So, and Hammond looks like he's going to kiss Harriman in that scene. He's, like, right up in his personal space.
Yeah, he is.
And then we get this great exchange again. It's really, really short.
General permission.
go.
We want to go save our friends. Go now.
Yeah. So then things really pick up here. He gives the order to have McMurdo give them the exact coordinates and tell them to go search for them. And then we cut back and the rest of the episode is in Antarctica.
Yeah.
Sam goes back down and she climbs back down to an extent and then
kind of just falls the rest tumbles, of the way.
Tumbles.
Thank God. She, like, when she lands, there's, like, a big-ass rock at the bottom. And I was like, oh, God. One fall wrong, she could have hit her head, broken her neck, broken something. Mm-hmm. Like, things could have been over much sooner.
Well, and she smacked her the back of her head as she slid down, too. It was not great. So she gets down to Jack and tells him that it's a nice planet and she can't find any help, and Jack's not answering at first, so she just snuggles back up over to him. Her face is
right
in his face. Mm-hmm. And he whispers, all right, I have the clip.
Colonel,
okay, there's a lot to break down in that.
Yes.
First of all, he says Sarah.
He does. Okay.
Closed captioning say Sam?
Yes. The closed captioning says Sam.
It does.
I think the official script says Sarah. But now, listening to, like, Jack say that, I hear both Sarah and Sam. I could hear it either way. I think it is Sarah, but my closed captioning says Sam.
Yeah. Now,
I choose to believe the closed captioning, but for the sake of heartbreak and, like, punch you in the stomachs, I like Sarah.
Yeah. I remember when you first watched it because you were freaking out. And I was like, he said, no.
Sam, look how closed captioning said it.
I clearly didn't have closed caption on the first time I said it because I was just texted you guys. He called her Sarah and she played along.
Yeah, she did.
She did.
And she, like, gives him permission to die, basically. Yeah. Like, you did all the fighting, you can rest now.
Well, because she told him to hold out.
Yeah.
And now she's telling him he can go to sleep, and it's, ugh. Yep. And she calls him Jack, and I don't know whether she's calling him Jack as Sam or she's letting him believe that it's Sarah. Ugh. So that he can,
either way,
I'm gonna believe that it's because she wanted to call him Jack.
I think it's because she's, I mean, yes.
But yes,
I,
no.
I think it's because it's her being Sarah. Like, she is gonna, she couldn't get him home, but what she can do for him is, like, bring a little piece of the home back to him, like, mm-hmm. by pretending to be Sarah for him so he can die with a little bit of peace.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. It's okay. This was fine.
This is fine.
I'm sure they obviously talk about it when they get back SGC and they really break it down.
To be fair, I don't think Jack will remember that whole conversation.
No. No.
They do not talk about it. No. But yeah, so she snuggles up next to him to die. You know, like you do. And then it goes like white. It's like there's like a half second where it's like, the fuck? Did they just die? And then we get the radios and the McMurdo people dropping down into the crevasse and Sam wakes up. And then it like kind of goes out again and Sam comes to Daniel, who is now in the crevasse with them. And I texted you guys this. This is what I texted you when it aired. I may have been very annoyed at how implausible it is that the SG team could get to Antarctica in the time that the McMurdo team got to them and got them prepped for evac. Getting to Antarctica is not easy.
It's magic.
Yeah. Well, and then I said minor blip and still less ridiculous than the X-Files movie in Antarctica.
Well, what isn't? Yeah, I love Sam looking at Hammond and going, sir, you came through the gate for us.
It's adorable.
And he's like, nah, fam.
But then I sure didn't. But then her next immediate response was to give him a breakdown of what was wrong with Jack.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Yes.
And her first real concern is for Jack, that mm-hmm. he's got a broken... Where is he? He's hurt.
He's bleeding internally.
Help. Yeah.
Oh, we also skipped over Sam saying that it's an honor.
It's an honor serving. Yes.
With you too.
Her own goodbye.
This is fun.
Guys, yes. I love this episode so much.
That's it. Yeah, that's the end of the episode.
That's it.
That's the end of the episode. We now have two Stargates and everyone's fine.
I do love the fact that season one builds so much into, like, it doesn't seem like it's going to build a whole bunch into, like, the lore of the show, I guess. Mm-hmm. But then as we get farther and farther in the show, we realize that all the little small things that they ingrained in season one somehow come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and how fucking brilliant is it, like, that Brad Wright was like, no, the twist is they're on Earth. Like, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. that there's two Stargates. And not only is that going to be a cool story, but now we have two Stargates, and, like, how does that affect gate travel and military and, like, that? Like you said, Mel, that plays in later with, like, other countries.
A lot of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
well, first it plays into the NID crap.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's incredible, and this one episode gives us the roots for so much.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's rate this thing.
I went first last time.
I'll go first. I'm giving it a 7 out of 7. And the reason I'm giving it a 7 out of 7 is, well, a lot of reasons. One, I find it highly rewatchable. I feel like any episode that I can sit down and, like, flick on and, like, super enjoy every time I watch it gets automatic high points. And my favorite thing about this episode, besides the fact that it's a heavy ship episode, because I am a Sam Jack shipper. Like,
what? So
I don't know how to, like, I broke my cover. But, and that is important to me. But what's more important to me is, like, character development. And I love that this episode, like I said earlier, highlights the absolute core of who each of these characters are, puts them in these situations, and we get to see who they are. And it's just fucking brilliant writing. Like, I find it, I was shocked then, and I would have been shocked if I was watching it for the first time in the 90s, that, like, second Stargate on Earth is such a twist, and I honestly enjoy the hell. It's well paced, it's well shot, it's well acted. I like the bloopers for this episode, so it gets a 7 out of 7 for me.
I also gave it a 7 out of 7. I actually have only rewatched this episode maybe twice. When I watched it today, it didn't seem like a 43-minute episode. Like, I felt like I had just started it and it was already over. So, I mean, as Jess said, the pacing was very well done. I think it holds up if you wanted to rewatch it. AT and RDA killed it with their acting prowess. Actually, everyone basically just killed it. I also agree that the second Stargate on Earth was a big major plot twist that will leave the door open for other things, as we've discussed already. All in all, it's just a really, really good episode, and that's it.
I'm gonna give it a 2.
You liar. Liar.
I think I'll give it a 7 out of 7 as well. For all the reasons you guys stated, it's a good episode. It has great character development. It sets up a lot of interesting things in the future. It's just good from start to finish. I mean, when we were talking about it, like I said, the only annoyances I had were really little things of like, why are you leaving the sterno on? Or you couldn't get to Antarctica that fast. Like, really nitpicky stuff. And that's like the only negative things I have to say about this episode. So, yeah. Our Air Medal Award. Here's the thing. My gut wants to give it to Sam, but
Daniel. I would almost say Daniel. Yeah,
Daniel saves them. He does. Yes.
Daniel, 100%.
He comes through.
Daniel.
Yeah, Daniel.
So, Air Medal Award to Daniel.
Way to
for
go,
figuring
Daniel
it out and saving Sam and Jack. Well
they're
done.
They're frozen tushies.
Yep. And somehow magically being there.
We also figured out time travel.
They gated. Okay. They gated.
They were gated to a different planet and then gated to.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So that was Solitudes. Our next episode is Tin Man, which is another good episode I love. If you love Solitudes, if you hate Solitudes, if you just want to come say hi, you can email us at chevronslock7@gmail.com or drop us a tweet at chevronslock7 on Twitter. And yeah, oh yeah, and you can find me, Jess, at ProfTenant at Twitter and at ProfessorTenant on Tumblr.
You can find me, Melanie, on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN, or you can find me on Tumblr at MyStupidDumbFlyboy.
You can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils or on Tumblr at Pianosa2 to the Fighting Eighth.
It was an honor serving with you two, Colonel.
So we made it through the shit, and now we're in the good stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
With only occasional piles of shit.
Yeah.
But they're like tiny turds. They're not like big turds.
They're not like long stretches.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say like long turds. I was like, I mean, all right.
Stretches. Long stretches.